Hello and good afternoon. This is Liz Peterson on Raise the Vibe here on Voice of Vashon's 101.9 FM. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. So today I have Meta Coach Jamie Wolf, who's worked with thousands of law enforcement and education professionals every day. And Jamie and I had planned a different topic today, and we may touch on that a bit, but we were just talking before the show, and there's a topic in real time, right now happening, this weekend, over the weekend, heavy on Jamie's heart. And we're going to dive in because we think it's important and very much the truth of what's happening in our world today. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Liz. Thanks for having me, and thanks for all you do.
I am so glad you're here with me today, and thank you so much for sharing your heart with me this morning. Could you please share with me what's really alive in you right now in this moment?
Well, I love that you say what's alive in you, because that is something that Marshall Rosenberg used to say, the founder of nonviolent communication, and it's really a beautiful way to really bring us to present time and what's true. So I just want to thank you, first of all, for being the beautiful human being that you are in the world and walking in a way where you're asking important questions and bringing people together on the radio so that we can learn from one another in our very special little place where we live, which you call the Vashon Bubble. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. So initially, we were going to talk about what can people do who live in primarily white communities, where we do. We live in a beautiful community, and it has its own diversity, and especially in terms of the LGBT community, there's lots of us here. We also, in terms of Black and brown people and different ethnicities, there's not much going on. I want to start out with praise, first of all, for our community, because a community of 10,000, I believe, more or less, we actually really showed up in terms of a march that I think you were influential in having happen. Can you tell us how many numbers? What were the numbers for that?
Are we talking about the silent vigil that I helped with, or the march that
both?
All of Washington did?
Tell us about both.
We had hundreds show up for the march on Vashon. It was beautiful. Thank you so much, Vashon, for showing up for, and representing
Washington.
I heard
as many as 1,000 people.
Black lives.
Yeah, so just a beautiful thing, and I love that our community is showing up. One of the reasons I chose to live here is because of how people really choose to do that. So what's really up for me right now and what's really present, I got a painful phone call this morning, and I kind of want to talk to folks out there about a few things in terms of what's happening with our Black and brown sisters and brothers in present time, and what we can do to be allies. An ally is a person who actually chooses to show up and step up and get uncomfortable in the interest of doing what's right. That doesn't mean going crazy, but it does mean saying things like, you know, wow, I just heard what you said, and that was really painful to hear. I wonder if we could talk about what's going on for you with that, and that statement, and not letting things go by anymore. This is an important time where we as white people must stand up and really speak to when we hear racist comments or things that are said or carelessness. But more than that, show up as empathetic, loving human beings. So I want to tell you a little story about an individual that I know, and one of the things that I've been doing, I have a friend who says, be a good white person, and so it kind of makes me laugh, and in that, trying to be a good white person, like, what does that mean? I've really sat down and done some writing and values clarification about what does that mean to me? How can I show up in that way? And it's never around being silent. So one of the things I've committed to is that I am calling and checking in on my friends of color regularly. I try to do at least one phone call a day to them, checking in, seeing how they're doing, and just being an ear. And what that means, we talked about this before, is just listening and presence. So I cannot imagine what they're feeling. And if you don't know, or you're really unfamiliar or feel nervous about how do I show up empathetically, I invite our listeners to go and look at Dr. Brené Brown. She has some great videos. You can just type in cartoon video, Brené Brown empathy, and get a look about that. So what things that are empathy not are things like saying, well, at least, no. I'm sorry, but in my experience, no, we haven't had their experience. Never saying I understand, I can't understand. There's no way, it's not possible. What to say is, wow, this is really hard, and I'm so sorry. And how can I show up more for you? And would you be willing to tell me more about how you're feeling? And so in my conversation this morning that was really hard, the things that I said were, would you be willing to share the impact of that on you? I'd love to, I'd be really interested to hear that and be an empathetic ear for that. And really creating a sacred space where people can pour their hearts out in a safe way. And I'm not going to correct them or judge them or preach or tell them or any of that. I'm not going to try to fix it. I can't fix their feelings, and I don't want to. I want to create a sacred space where they can feel their feelings. So I'm going to tell this story. I met this gentleman in my work, and I train primarily law enforcement, but also educators and social services people. It's about 10,000 people a year, a lot of people I work with. And he's an individual who is actually a peace officer and a training officer in another state. And he's this most amazing man who is just a beautiful human being, an African-American man. And we had some conversations initially. I asked him a little bit about himself. And we know, it's interesting, the FBI taught me this when I went to Rangemaster School, that one of the highest level things we can do to stay safe, which is interesting, but also it's a beautiful thing, is to demonstrate interest with people. So I asked him to tell me a little bit about himself. And keeping in mind that he's a peace officer, he shared with me that he grew up in the Bay Area and that his parents were both Black Panthers. And I said to him, and this is another thing when we think about what can we do, I said to him, you know, I'm just going to tell you that the only thing that I know about Black Panthers is what I've seen on TV. And so would you be willing to share with me? And so he really told me about what his parents did and how beautiful they were, and they really loved the community, and they were really, his mother was in there organizing and doing things. She was a public health nurse. And so kind of fast forward, we've seen each other a few times now over the years. I've asked him some more questions, and now we're at this big law enforcement dinner, and I'm sitting next to him. I actually loved to follow him around like a puppy dog, because he's such, the way that he talks is so loving and kind. He's what I call a real Christian. You know, he really walks his talk in that way. He's just a really a great human. So we were having a conversation. I said, would you tell me more about your parents? And so he was telling me, I said, tell me more about the food program and what happened. He says, well, my mother used to go into the schools in the inner city in San Francisco, and the Black Panthers, it's really unknown by most people that they did have these food programs, and they would feed underprivileged children and show up with also medicine for them, because they didn't have access to medicine and doctors. And so it was kind of a different time. This was in 1966, right around 1966. I was born in 65. I don't know when you were born. I think
69.
69. Right?
60s babies. So,
we were little babies. So as we're talking, this woman is sitting across from her, and she, I'm not sure what her ethnicity is. So I don't want to presume to guess, but she's not a white person. And I'm sorry that I can't tell you what that is, what her ethnicity is. And it doesn't really matter, except she kind of comes into the conversation and says, can I interrupt? I know you're having a private conversation. And he says, yeah. And she said, are you talking about the Black Panthers? And I could feel myself get like, what is she going to say? And then all these other eyes of all these law enforcement people start looking at us at this dinner. And he says, what would you like to know? And he says, who was your mother? And he says, she was blah, blah, her name. She's still alive today, so I'm not going to say her name. And he says, he says, why? And she says, well, because I went to this school. Did she work at this particular school? And he says, oh yeah, that was one of their main schools. And she says, I'm pretty sure I knew your mom. Was she this? Did she do that? Did she... And he says, yeah, that's my mom. You're describing my mom. And he said, she got very tearful. And she said, oh my God, I'm alive because of your mother. We were starving and she fed my family and she'd give us food and she would make sure that we had medicine and she doctored us. She was a, you know, public health nurse and she doctored us, she took care of us. All this beautiful stuff. And so I'm listening to this conversation and I'm looking around me and it's so interesting because we're in this law enforcement environment. And I noticed that two gentlemen got up from the dinner and walked out. And one of them did not come back. Right? So here we are in the midst of this gorgeous story and people can't set aside their judgment of what they think this group is to hear a beautiful part of this. And so one of the things I want to speak about, and I want to tell more of this wonderful human story, is a thing that we do when we're triggered and when we're dehumanizing people is we get in all or nothing thinking, all or nothing, black, white, right, wrong, this, that. We can know that I'm triggered. So, you know, please take this away, people. I know I'm triggered when I start getting to this, that, all or nothing, black, white. And that's right, wrong. So what this one individual, he walked away and he actually filed a complaint about me later, which was interesting because I was leading that seminar, a written complaint that there was an inappropriate conversation about a criminal group at the table and we should never be talking about them in positive ways. And he left the organization.
Wow.
That I was a part of. So, this dehumanization, we dehumanize people when we start thinking that all people are the same in one group or another. So how is that happening in our country today? There's all white people are like this, all black people are like this, all brown people are like this, LGBT people are like this, mothers are like this, single moms are like this. We do it, we categorize people, and it's something that comes from an old part of our brain. It's very primal and it's to keep us safe. The problem with dehumanization when I stop looking at an individual or a group in the big picture of who they are, is that once I dehumanize them, I can harm them. So what happens with this? I can harm a person when I no longer see them as a human being. And we know that we're dehumanizing. This is the cue, the clue for people. When I say things like, and I've heard these things, I know all my friends of color, we've laughed about this, when people will say to us, well, you know what, Jamie, you're just not like all the other LGBT people. You're different. That's dehumanization. So it's a way of taking me out of my group so that you can continue with your hatred of the rest of the group. That's what that comes down to, and your judgment of them. And the master of dehumanization was Hitler, who's great at it. And we're seeing dehumanization in all kinds of ways today. Our president is using terms like rapists and murderers and talking about Latinos, Mexican, Hispanic, Chicanos. We cannot put children in institutions and do disgusting behavior if we see them as human. We can't do that. Those things that are happening are despicable at our borders.
Yeah.
So this piece is so important. Like, in what ways am I potentially dehumanizing people? And for me, I'm actually recognizing the things I'm doing, right? Like my friends who will talk about themselves and say, I'm extremely conservative. All these pictures come in my mind when they say that. And I have to remind myself, okay, wait, who am I talking to? What do they mean? And at NBC, we want to ask people nonviolent communication, could you please help me understand? When you say I'm extremely conservative, what does that mean?
Right.
And so that we're talking the same language. So fast forward years, I'm talking with this man. Every time I see him, I love seeing him. I invite him to lunch when I'm in doing training for his department. And we built this kind of bond. And when everything started going a little bit crazy here, Mr. George Floyd was violently murdered. I don't know if you saw yesterday on the television, but actually we had some incredibly conservative people who actually said publicly for the first time ever that it was a violent murder and inexcusable. So, you know, I'm not doing that least, but wow, you know,
good.
There's some acknowledgement there. So I want to challenge my friends who are white to pick up the phone and call your friends of color, because that's what I started doing, and saying things like, I can't imagine, how can I support you? Let me tell you that I am your ally. if I act in any way that's inappropriate or say anything, please, you have license to school me hard right now. How can I show up as a better human being? And then mostly it's just been listening to grief, stories of grief. And there's this beautiful book about grief, and I think it's the fourth gate of grief, which is, and I think this is happening for many Americans, I know it's happening for me, grieving that which we hoped would have been and won't. So when I call this person, and he's one of my people on my list, and I call him and I said, I know that we are professional friends, but I'm calling you to offer my support. And he tells me, you know, I'm doing okay. I have a great support system. I have my family of prayer in my church, and things are okay, and I'm safe. And thank you for checking in on me. And I said, we had a long conversation, and I said, would you be willing to tell me your perspective of events right now, given your history? And he says, I'm afraid and I'm hopeful at the same time, but I'm being very cautious, and I'm reminded of the events of my childhood. So at the end of that conversation, I said, I've never asked you what happened with your parents. And he said, my mother is actually 85 years old now, and she is still organizing and doing her public health stuff and feeding hungry people. And she's still out there going 100 miles an hour. And I said, what happened to your father? And he said, in 1970, he was on a cable car in San Francisco. And they had been being harassed because they were Black Panthers by the police, and the police had been puncturing their tires and leaving notes on their car, and they got some notes from the FBI. And his father had actually stepped away from the family because he knew that there was a great opportunity that he would be killed. And so he was on the cable car one day, and I feel nauseous inside even saying this. That's the impact. The police came onto the cable car and shot him in the face. And in listening to the story, there are no words. I said, you know, again, I can't even imagine. There are no words. I'm so sorry. And he said, you know, I'm going to tell you because I get that you are trying your hardest to get it. But I have in my safety deposit box a letter from my dad that he left me. And he chronicled all the events of African Americans in our country, 400 years of oppression, and why he was doing what he was doing. And he wrote to me these beautiful, exquisite letters. And the title of the letters, when he put them all together on the front, and Liz, this just, I can't even imagine the impact.
Yeah.
Why I have to die. Mm. And his father had made a decision that he knew he would be killed. He knew that that's what would happen. And sure enough, it did. So that was another excruciating conversation, and I want to challenge my white friends again that these phone calls are not comfortable, that they stay with me for days, that I'm very mindful of compassion fatigue. I'm taking really good care of myself, but I am choosing to show up because we can't say, when is this going to be? We can say, I'm choosing not to say, when is this going to be over? Wow, how long are we going to protest? For 400 years. 400 years in our country,
yep.
African Americans have been oppressed and marginalized and been the victims of hate crimes and murders and lynchings and slavery and you name it. And if you listen before, you all know I'm from the Deep South, 8 generations there. You know, as they say, and this is a bit crude, but the shit is real. So let's get ourselves uncomfortable and feel with them for a moment what right. They're experiencing. So this sets the stage for trust and creating an environment where people can know that we are their ally. And so this morning my phone rang and it was him. And he said, hey, Jamie, I need to talk to you about some training stuff. But first of all, I just want to share something with you that's on my heart. And I said, what is it? And I wasn't really prepared for this. And I recognized kind of afterwards that this is white privilege. I don't wake up to this every day. This isn't part of how I wake up every day. I wake up to the news and terrible stories, but this isn't my reality. And now I'm thinking about how shocking it was to me. And this is how he lives all the time. How my Black and brown friends live all the time.
Yeah.
So he said, do you know about the lynchings? And I said, I know about two of them. And for those of you who may not be paying attention or watching TV in Palmdale, California, in Victorville, California, we want to say and push this away and say, this stuff is happening in the South. This stuff is happening in the middle of the country. Nuh-uh. Palmdale and Victorville, California, two African-American men were found hanging. And the police ruled them suicides initially, and their family, if you go watch the videos, are saying no.
No.
And it's interesting because if you're not from California, Palmdale and Victorville are very close to each other. And at the very same time that this was happening, that these two men showed up, there were some teachers who were actually photographed during a graduation holding a noose. And a principal took a picture of that and posted it on social media.
Oh my gosh.
I feel enraged. Like, what are you thinking, principal? Like, what are you doing? So he's resigned and now they've lost their jobs. But more than that, they made a joke about it's the noose of education that we're finally free for the summer. No.
No.
These are not things to joke about, people being hung. But I actually believe, in my mind, it's not an accident. It's a statement of allegiance with hatred and evil that is happening in our country right now. And so what do we do with these people? So he called me and he says, there's been two more. So now we've got Houston, New York City, Palmdale, and Victorville, the same thing. In my mind, and what I know of history is this is no accident.
Yeah.
This is a statement. And furthermore, where he lives, let me see if I can find where I wrote this down. I have so many notes here. Where he lives in a park, Merritt Park in Oakland, California, a noose was found hanging from a tree. And I said, what does this mean to you? And he said, what is the impact on you right now? What is the story that you're telling yourself? And he says, I try to be a democratic, loving Christian man. I try my hardest. And you just have to believe me, he is. He's just beautiful. When he says democratic, meaning like taking, not like a Democrat, but like taking the sides of all people about what is going on. But the sad part is, Jamie, that the reason I'm calling you is I want you to call and share what I'm about to tell you with your black and brown friends and to remind them that we must remember that we need to be careful because we can be killed because of the color of our skin and that we cannot be alone. And we must be aware. And I said, what happened? And he said that one of his friends has a son who was driving his car, and he was going out to visit a friend in a farmhouse somewhere. And he heard the rumblings of a big truck coming up behind him. Now, I don't know if you've seen the racist movies. Have you seen those, Liz, those trucks? It's like a terror. Black people
truck.
Know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So came up on the car and ran this black man off the road, a young black man off the road. And they got out of the car. And we all know what's going to happen in the story. And at the most perfect time, some white people pulled up in a car and said, I'm just noticing that I said white people. I'm going to have to check in with him. Some people came up in a car and did something to stop what was happening, and the kid was able to get in his car, black man, and get away and get to safety. So again, what can we do? We cannot drive on by. We can stop. We can be willing to actually try to do something. And yes, might you be hurt? Yes. Yes. But we can't just drive idly by while someone is being hunted down. And we've seen the images of men being chased down in the streets presently. There is no ignoring what's happening because he looked like some guy who there'd been a burglary, which there was no report of by the police. So you can murder this man on the street. Like, he was running. He was out jogging. So the message of my friend this morning in telling me this story, this very upsetting story, is that we have to be allies for our friends of color, and it's not even enough to be calling them and offering support. But what is it that we're doing real time? Are we speaking out? Are we educating? Are we saying to people when they say things, that's not all right? Are we willing to step in a moment when somebody says or does something that's not okay? what are we actually doing? And so he asked me to call all my Black and Brown friends, and I've done that this morning, to remind them that this is a time to be careful. So the offer that I'm going to make publicly to any Vashon person out there, a person of color or otherwise, whoever you are, if I'm available and I'm on the island and you are feeling like you got to go somewhere and you're feeling nervous, and I can follow you in my car or lead in my car, and we'll still do the COVID thing and stay safe, but how can I support you? Do you want me to walk down the street with you? Let me know, and I'll do my best to show up. If there's any way that I can, I'll show up for you to walk with you and walk beside you. You can have your own personal 55-year-old out of shape bodyguard. That's what it'll take. So,
and I hope that more people step up to do the same. Vashon, mm-hmm. It's time. We live in a blessed community here. As you said, I like to call it the Vashon bubble. And we really need to step up, stand up, right, and be present.
Right. And it's nice. I love that everybody showed up, but that can't be the end of it.
No.
We have to be speaking to people and saying, I am your ally. And know what it looks. Go Google it. Look up what to be an ally really means. Start owning your white privilege. Start looking at the ways that we take for granted our freedoms and what's here. And yes, I'm grateful that I have all this. And I'm aware that other people don't have that. Preparing for this, if people want to go and educate themselves, they can go and look at the websites. There are all kinds of websites about white supremacist groups and where they are and what they're doing and their activities. You can see that they've been growing all over the place. The Holocaust Museum has beautiful maps of where these groups are and what they're doing. And so how is that happening? And if we look at, they have been preparing for this moment for a long time. And when our president says things, it's called the dog whistle. When he says things like, these are rapists and criminals, that's a dog whistle to racists. And let's just stop denying what's happening in our country. And when people say to me, well, Jamie, that's politics. No, it's not politics. It's ethics, and it's actually what's right and what's wrong. That this isn't about politics, Republican, Democrat anymore. When we see people like the people that Lindsey Graham speaking out yesterday about the murder of George Floyd, this isn't politics anymore. We must come together as a nation.
Yes.
And speak truth to truth and show up. And when our Black friends need to go somewhere, that we'll be willing to go with them, walk beside them, be their support for them. And right now, the fans are the flames have been fanned by our president, and there is a green light happening right now. We're seeing these groups of Proud Boys. You want to do something? Folks, go Google Proud Boys. KKK isn't the only one around anymore. So what are the names of racist groups? What do they look like? What do they wear? Are they in my community? And get really educated about what's true. But at the end of the day, Liz, what I want to really invite people to do is that we cannot have this benign indifference anymore.
No.
Our Black and Brown friends are suffering. And for us to go to work and think, oh, they're all right. How you doing? I'm all right. They're not all right. They're not all right. So how... Most people don't want to say anything because they're afraid, because they don't know what to say. So not saying something isn't the answer either. How do I show up? And what do I do? There's a beautiful person in our community. I won't out her, but she posted on Facebook her story where she was in a coffee shop, and this woman said an ugly thing. I don't know if you saw that on Facebook.
No, I didn't.
To a Black woman working there. And she said, the white woman basically said, well, can I wear my Trump hat if she can talk about Black Lives Matters? And the person walked out and got in her car. And I know this person. She's a person of deep integrity. She's also part of a minority group. And she got in her car and then she went back in and she thought about it. And she told the Black woman, oh my God, I cannot believe that I was silent. I just didn't know what to say. So here's the thing. It's okay to not know what to say. It's okay. If all you say is this isn't right, this isn't okay. You don't have to be an expert and have a PhD in race relations or nonviolent communication. I invite you to start studying those things and looking at those things. How can I offer empathy? But how do we speak truth to truth, and what do we do? And it was very meaningful to the woman that she went back in and said, I'm sorry, man, I didn't know what to say. And do you want me to go talk to that woman now? And the woman had gone on break and gone off. I feel really proud of that person. If you're listening to this and you know who you are, I feel really proud of you, because we get to make a mistake and we get to not know what to do, but go back and say, I need a do-over. I didn't show up in the best way possible. So I don't know if that's helpful for folks, but it's in these everyday little bitty things. And in our town, we have Black Lives Matter signs everywhere. And I'm going to make a challenge to the restaurants that don't. I'm noticing who doesn't. And it feels really despicable to me and yucky. I love that there's this one restaurant that I had this idea about in our town that is kind of a greasy spoon place. And I walked by there and they had Black Lives Matters in their window. I thought, right on, there goes my stereotype. They're getting my business because they are in alignment with my values. The flower shop on the corner, the meat and noodle place. Mm-hmm. Yay for you, giving all your proceeds. That's the way to show up, white people, and to show up for how do we support our people real time, right now.
Yes, and we can put aside our crisis of confidence and put ourselves out there and have a voice and just let our community know that we're standing with them.
That's right. Talk about crisis of confidence. I'm curious what that means to you.
To me, crisis of confidence means I'll give an example. When I put something out on Instagram and I feel like I'm really putting an opinion out there, and then a couple hours later, I'm thinking, should I have written that? Should I have said that? Am I going to be judged for that? Should I take it down? You know, should I retract what I said? You know, so it's really putting your heart and your feelings out there, sitting with that crisis of, you know, what are going to be the repercussions of me saying that, if any at all? And usually there are none. But step forward, be brave, have courage, have a voice, put your heart and your feelings out there. And you know, if you enter into that crisis of what's going to happen, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, Brene Brown talks about that, and she says, courage is not courage if I'm not afraid. Fear is requisite for it to be a courageous act.
Yes.
I'm not courageous if I'm not afraid. It's really stepping into the fear, right?
Yeah, and that fear of judgment is real. Is real.
Woo! No kidding, right?
Yeah.
No kidding. And slowly, you know, we can change the hearts and minds of people one person at a time. I have this friend, and she's a beautiful friend of mine. She's in my tribe. I love her. And she said something that was kind of irritated me one day, and I waited a day. I took some time with it, and then I had a little conversation with her about that. And it doesn't mean right then. So if you're triggered, this may not be the time to have the conversation if you're going to put your person on blast. People are so vulnerable and raw right now. Yeah. So we can do these things with kindness. But she was sharing with me that she really thought about our conversation, and she had the opportunity to be in business partnership with an individual who was a Black man. And as a result of our conversation, she was able to really show up. And she called me and she said, I'm just so happy I knew what to say. And it was great. And I just said, this must be so hard. And I'm so proud of her. I'm so proud of her that she took that. And that man called her back and said, you know, it just meant so much to me that you showed up that way. Right. And so changing the hearts and minds of people and helping them show up as real allies and having courage. And I want to say to Vashon people, I have a little business in town. I go into work, and I'm these businesses that are showing up as real human beings. They're gonna have my business first because they are in alignment with my values, and I will therefore support them. Even my hair cutter, I love. She wrote and said, "I'm gonna be able to cut hair again. Everybody sign up." And she sent out this little bleep that said, if you're going to come in my salon and talk about Black Lives Matters and tell me that that's not okay, please find someone else to get a haircut with. So I called her and I said, do you want me to pay in advance for my haircut? I know you must be hurting right now. So we can do that too. So people who are being allies, who are hurting financially, we can support them too. Support she said them. No. But there we go. So I don't know if I'm...
That was thoughtful of you, Jamie.
Well, I read it somewhere to do it. You know, here's the funny part, and I'm just going to own this. If people say, Jamie, how do you know what to do? I read, I study, I educate myself all the time. I watch what other people are doing. Nothing I do is an original idea. I haven't thought of this stuff on my own. But I look at the masters, and I think about, you know, the highest level vibrational question, just to take this to a spiritual level, mm-hmm. the lowest level vibrational question is why? Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening in our country? Why do we have to have all these things? There's so much going on. There's unemployment, the highest levels of unemployment. We got COVID. We've got all this stuff. Why I say why is because Mother Nature is putting us on our knees so that we can no longer ignore systemic racism. That's why I think. But let's get out of the why. The highest level spiritual question is, who do I need to be right now? Who do I need to be to show up as the human being that I need to be? And so I go shakingly forward. I've produced two videos that are impact videos, and one of them talks about systemic racism and how African Americans are disproportionately imprisoned in our country. And it's I don't know if you've seen it yet, but I actually have a man's hands in chains, like shackles, and they're slave shackles in there. And I feel nervous. I work in the law enforcement community. How is that going to be perceived? Mm-hmm. And who do I need to be? Well, Dr. Martin Luther King taught us a man. I know today he would be inclusive and say a human. A human won't be judged by what they do in times of peace, but what we do in times of struggle. And I can't remain silent. I know you know I'm a part of the LGBTQIAS2 community, mm-hmm. and I occupy several of those little parts. And for years, you saw us wear shirts that said silence equals death. And that is really what this means, and it means it quite literally. For us, it was Matthew Shepard. For me, having all kinds of things happen to me where I've been threatened physically for those reasons. But this isn't about me right now. We're talking about right now, African American silence does equal death. We see someone being harassed, stop and say something. We see someone say a snide thing, stop and say something. So.
And I want to stop and give a shout out to the person who stopped for your friend's child. Mm-hmm. The angel in physical form that thought for a second, something's not right here. And stopped just that minute to intervene and ask, is everything okay right now? Mm-hmm. Changed everything.
They saved a life.
Yeah.
They saved a life. And part of this is when we talk about, I got here the work of Dr. Let me grab this right down here. I just, you know, what can we do? I just took two seminars.
Yeah. How can we be the highest version of ourselves in this moment?
Yep. Who do I need to be?
How do we show up?
How do we show up? And this, so if you want to do stuff and you don't understand what's on, you go Google Dr. Roxy Manning, M-A-N-N-I-N-G. She's beautiful. And I took her class just last week about exploring the deep dive into the layers of our impact and understanding what our words are, but then also talking about systemic racism and what that means. And if these terms and these things feel uncomfortable to you, then what is that? What is implicit bias? Go and Google that. We all have it. It's okay. You're human. But know what yours is. What is systemic racism? What is white privilege? I said to you last time, I can still stick my head into a police car and I know I'm going to be okay. I don't have to be afraid when I get pulled over.
Right.
I get to relax. And so, you know, we're seeing all these things and they just keep happening more and more and more and more. How do we stop it? By each one of us taking a stand. And I invite people, in fact, I challenge you to do three things a day. One of them being education. So read something, go online, whatever it is. And I recommend the Anti-Racism Daily Newsletter by Nicole Cardoza. And I think Liz will put that up later in the, it's a beautiful piece and it explains the history of what's happening. You get one a day, right?
Yeah.
So education. And then number two, educate. So share educate in a gentle, kind, loving way. How can we educate people and say, that's just not okay, what just happened? Okay, would you like a do-over? I'm going to hope for that. Not letting people say hateful things. And then number three, call your friends who are black and brown. Text them, write them, how are you? Let them know that they are loved. And I say, I don't know what to say except I love you. And I want to be your ally. I am your ally. I'm doing my very best. How are you? Would you be willing to share with me how you are? And they might say, I'm fine. Okay. Just know I'm here. That's all right. So three things a day. If each one does that, each one of us does that, then we can change the tide. It's the butterfly effect. I know, yes, you know what that is, right?
Yes. Ripples. Create the ripples. Yeah. What you do to one person, then they in turn will turn and do something kind to another and another and another. Yeah, let's keep the ripple going. I don't want to see everything be set aside and just move on business as usual. I want to see people still doing the work, still speaking up.
Yes. And if you can carry a placard and march, please go do that. I want to say that my friend's father was murdered by the police in 1970. I cannot imagine that all these years later.
50 years later.
Yes. That this is what we're seeing. So, you know, other things that people can do is please read about the anti-lynching legislation that's happening right now. Senator Booker and Senator Harris put that forward, and it's being held up by Senator Rand. If you don't know what's happening right now, he actually protested against it on the floor on the day of Mr. Floyd's funeral. This is despicable and disgusting behavior. If you don't know what to write your politicians and tell them, I want you to stand up against this and have a voice. The fact that the three black people in the Senate are the ones that wrote this bothers me. Why was this brought forward by them? You can write a letter of support to Ms. Harris or Mr. Booker. You can watch them talking. Ms. Harris gives a very impassioned speech to Mr. Rand about, you don't need to educate me about the history of lynching in our country. And the things he is doing, Mr. Rand, right now are despicable and speak to everything. So let's identify, what are the dog whistles to racists in our country? Why is it that this is even being held up? My friend told me that this anti-lynching bill was introduced into Congress, Liz, in 1922.
Wow.
And it has passed the House all those years, and it's never passed the Senate. What can you do? Start screaming. This has to get passed.
Yeah, this has to stop.
Yeah. So
it's ridiculous that we're even discussing, you know, I mean, in my mind, it just seems ridiculous that 50 years later, that this is still a topic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, one of my spiritual teachers, Marianne Williamson, says this thing all the time. I'm going to mess it up. She says it all the time. I should know exactly what she says, but she says, may it all not be for naught. It's a double negative. I know. But may the death of George Floyd, Sandra Bland, all of those people, my friend's father, may it not be for naught.
Yeah.
We can change history right now, one person at a time. Three things a day. I challenge people. Three things a day. Educate, be educated, reach out. Silence equals death. Really.
Yeah, and we're seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's real.
No one stepped in to stop what happened with Mr. Floyd. It's so interesting. It came out yesterday as well in the police. I saw this all over police stuff that actually the person who was the dispatcher called the supervisor and tried to express. And she says, I know, I don't care if you call me a rat, which in law enforcement, she didn't say rat, but it's that's the thing that everybody fears the most. You know, have they called you about this? Or are you looking? And it seems very subtle to someone who doesn't know this woman was so brave in what she did. She actually tried to do something to intervene in the best way that she knew how. I'm watching it on my screen. Have they contacted you? And the guy says, nah, it's just a routine stop. No big deal. And he doesn't even know what's happening, that his officers are murdering someone. So. Oh, another book I'm reading right now, but it's excruciating. Is called How to Be an Anti-Racist, and it's recommended by Black Lives Matter's reading list. Black Lives Matter also has a reading list for children, I posted that on my Facebook page. If you don't
Oh,
know
great.
what those books are, and it's interesting because one of my friends wrote me and said, "Oh, I sent this to my friend who's black," and I thought you missed the point. Like, she knows what children's books are for black people. You don't need to send her that. You need to read them to your children.
Yes,
That's how
yeah.
we change. That's how we change things up. Now, I realize my friend is doing her best, but those are the kinds of little insidious things that it's incumbent upon us to really educate ourselves and know how to stand up in a real way.
And our families and our children, and to keep having conversations with our elders to kind of break down those belief systems that are, still functioning under the surface. Sure. And let's talk about that a little bit because, not only do I see it, in different conversations, but also, on our little island, on one of our Facebook pages, I see white privilege. So let's break that down a little bit. George Floyd being questioned because of his past, quote unquote, stating facts. This person saying, well, my boys worked hard, for what they got. It's trickling there. Well, all lives matter. All of these statements. And I have to give this person the benefit of the doubt that, maybe it's just lack of knowledge or experience, but how do we speak, to people in our community about these tough topics?
Well, in terms of the piece of Mr. Floyd, as a former use of force expert for a department and having written our use of force policy and being an FBI trained range master and having special training from the FBI around what's okay and what's not okay. Well, first of all, I want to take a moment here. I'm thinking, are you having some emotions about those discussions? Is that
Well,
happening right
yes, of
now?
course, because this way of thinking impacts people. I'm sorry. I'm at a loss for words right now.
Don't be sorry. I see the emotion, and so I kind of would like to speak to that. If you're a person right now who's feeling cold and unemotional, please go check yourself and call a therapist. Because right now, if you're not feeling upset and angry and scared and tired and confused and hopeful and all of those emotions, wow. There's something there. People who are absent empathy for another are called a sociopath. If you can't have empathy and compassion for, so I love that you're having these feelings because it tells me you're alive inside.
Thank you, Jamie.
Mr. Floyd was violently murdered. And as a person who understands the use of force, we don't even need to know that. For 8 minutes, almost 9 minutes, a man put his knee on the neck. It is the most violent, disgusting thing I have ever seen of all the videos I've watched, and I study these things as part of my job.
Was horrific.
It's horrific. And I actually would tell people, it's like I want to say watch it for the impact, but it was so traumatizing even to me. It's horrible. It doesn't matter in law enforcement what someone's done before. He could have had an AK-47 there and they could have taken it away from him. He was handcuffed and helpless. And force is supposed to be proportionate to what the threat is.
Yeah.
He was a threat of a zero. And in our country, the land of the free and the home of the brave, I hope it's true. We have courts that adjudicate these things, and it goes through a legal process. It is not up to the police officer to decide to execute someone over a $20 check. Is that what was happening? He'd written a bad check, whatever it was. No. It's
Right.
excessive use of force and it's murder. Lots of people are asking me why is it, why isn't he getting first degree murder? Well, it has to be premeditated to get that. So that's just part of the law. And they're actually looking, congressionally about changing some of these laws right now. And so police can't be held with impunity. And there's all these things that need to happen and change in our systems. But I am actually proud of our country that the other three officers that stood by and did nothing, are being held under what's called vicarious liability. Vicarious liability says I am responsible for the behavior of another. Federal law actually stipulates in law enforcement that I have an affirmative duty to intervene in cases of excessive use of force. So to these people who wrote these things on our Vashon and All thread, I would like to say to you, I would like to actually ask you, what need does it meet for you to see a black man get murdered for $20? That's really what it comes down to. Because if you want to try to explain it away, there is no legal justification under the law. It's wrong, and it goes against our Constitution or against every single law in our country. So what's happening for you that you think this is okay? I'm not going to defend the decision of our country. Our Constitution already said what's okay and what's not okay. So what's happening on your side of the bridge? So that's number one. Number two, when people talk about my children have worked hard too. Yes. A lot of us have worked hard and had real struggles. I lived in my truck for a year. I've had some real struggles. I've lived a pretty hard time, mostly over judgments about who I am on that spectrum. But I'll tell you, Liz, I can still walk down the street and feel safe, mostly, sometimes not in some places, but mostly. I could blend in. I could grow my hair back long. I could wear earrings. I could put on makeup. Our friends of color, our black and brown sisters, they can't do that. They can't hide. They can't get away. It's ever-present fear for them. And it is generational trauma. It's 400 years of institutionalized oppression and trauma. Being taken from their countries, kidnapped, brought on boats. Yes, I'm talking about slavery and brought over to this country. And you know, the police were formed originally. People may not know this. Google the history of police. Police were formed as they were the people who hunted down runaway slaves. And that's where the badge initially, like, go do your history. Learn about the history in this country. Your black and brown friends know this. They already know. And don't go ask them to tell you. Go research and learn. It's all over. All you have to do is go and Google something. You know, I'm thinking about a lot of my friends don't understand. Why is everybody so upset about this Trump thing in Tulsa? Go Google Tulsa, what happened in Tulsa. Go Google it and watch it. If you don't know what the significance of it is, and that originally it was going to be held on Juneteenth. I'm not going to explain what these things are. Go Google it. It is a dog whistle to white supremacists across the country that we are going to go stand on holy ground where in Tulsa, the most violent act in our history towards African Americans, it was disgusting what happened there. What was that? What's the significance of that? I don't know. I think about my friend's dad, why I have to die. And I just don't want any more people to die, Liz.
Yeah, me either.
I want people to live in freedom and beauty and be able to walk through the forest like we have here and feel safe. And we have so much power and privilege. So what can we say? We can ask people, what needs does it meet for you to defend the murderers of a man? I'm curious. Ask them the question back. Don't get on the defensive. We don't need to be on the defensive. The law's on our side.
No.
I was at a store, I won't say the store, but I was asking a woman, how's it going? And she said that a couple of Vashon people have come in and wearing MAGA hats and refusing to wear masks and really being pretty belligerent in her store. And I'm sorry to see that here. And I also want to say that you and I are so privileged to live here because we hear about these one or two people and it's like, oh, and there's people who are living where that is the entire community. It's everywhere. So my question isn't about other people and their white privilege. My question is, how can I be aware of my own privilege? And I was awakened today by the words of a friend, and I am reminded that I go to sleep every night in a safe bed, in a safe town, in a safe place. and I get to rest peacefully. But some of the people who work for my organization don't have that. When I'm talking to one person who works very closely with me on my organization, in the background, I hear sirens and airplanes and all kinds of racket all the time. That is the reality of where she lives. And I say, doesn't that bother you? She says, I'm used to it. Let's not become used to it. Let's not let it be the norm anymore. So,
is there anything that you would like to discuss in our last 5 minutes that you would like our community to know or would like our community to know they can do?
You know, we live in this most beautiful, gorgeous place. And we have so much power and privilege on our island. We have a very wealthy demographic. We have people, lots of folks who lived through the 60s, and people are showing up in a big way. So I want to be on this positive side of, I feel proud of where I live. I feel really proud of us for showing up.
Me too.
I saw that video of the African-American woman. I don't know her. She was videotaped from atop one of the restaurants. I don't know if you saw that. And she said, these people, they don't even know me. And they're all walking down the street for me. It was really beautiful.
Oh, that's beautiful. I have to look for it.
Yeah. So I feel proud of us. I feel hopeful and optimistic if people don't go back to sleep. So my message is, don't go back to sleep. Stay awake and continue and stay uncomfortable. If you get comfortable again, you've gone back to sleep. And there's this thing called the gravitational pull to the familiar. It wants to suck us back down to what we know and our comfort level. Yesterday, a beautiful thing happened. I like to talk about the good things that are happening. So a county in California, Merced County, we had sent out, I teach a class called Cultural Competence, and then also teach a class about implicit bias. And we had sent out a big blast. Of course, you know, I want to be successful in my business. And hey, these are two classes you could have right now. And one of the counties in California, their city council just ordered that all peace officers will be trained in this immediately. And so my phone started ringing. And as we're talking, I glanced at my phone, and one of the most conservative counties in California, it's them. And I've been calling them and talking to them saying, if it's not me you hire someone, but get your people in training right now. Here's three other training providers that are offering what I'm offering. I'd love you to get my class, but please, you know, go somewhere, get the training. And the phone's ringing. So I'm excited that we've reached this point of what I call the preponderance,
Yes. Right?
Preponderance. And it's the tipping. Is it going to be our tipping point or our breaking point? And that depends on what we're going to do.
Please let it be our tipping point.
Yes.
You know, that we can create big change. Big change needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We need to create, support. We need to create a sense of safety in our communities, and not just our own community, but around the United States and the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Make sacred space for your friends to talk. Let them feel their emotions. If you are afraid of anger, go get the book, The Language of Emotions. It's a beautiful book, The Language of Emotions, and read the chapter on anger. It's a beautiful emotion. If you're not feeling angry right now, ask yourself some very serious questions. Take an inventory. What's up with that? What's happening? Why is this okay with me to watch all around me and I can't be bothered? Get bothered. Can I say one more thing?
Yes, please. You have 2 minutes.
So yesterday I taught a class. It's called Trauma-Informed Care, and I taught it to, so this is just another hopeful thing, to 50 professionals who work with children in our juvenile institutions, mostly Black and brown children in California. And we showed up, and in the morning in the class, I said, let's just take a half an hour here and talk about current events and what's happening. And I want to tell you, there are some amazing human beings. Those people were talking, they were in tears. They're talking about the children, how they love them, how they showed up for them. And so there we are. Let's stay hopeful and let's stay vigilant. Don't go back to sleep.
Yes. Thank you. Jamie Wolf, everybody. And we're going to be doing a couple more episodes together, so be looking for those in the following 2 weeks. Jamie, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Liz.
And thank you, everyone, for joining me today on Raise the Vibe. And I usually say, get out there and raise the vibe, but let's get out there and be the highest version of ourselves. Thank you for joining me, everybody. Have a great day.
You too.